You're listening to Kiwi Roots Rugby Podcast. Let's go!
And welcome back, folks, to another episode of Kiwi Roots Rugby. I'm your host, Felix Filippo, and I'm joined by Scotty Poynton, your two guys leading the ship today. Man, we are recording this, and there's so much that has transpired since the All Blacks went down against the mighty Irish pack. Scotty, we were expecting some massive changes when NZR planned this press conference. I think you'd agree with me in saying that the whole of New Zealand was in a period of mourning at the end of that Steinlager test series, and it seemed as though the public wanted some blood. Did we see that in the press conference? How did you see that? Can you call it an event transpire? And were we left satisfied or unsatisfied by the decisions made during that press conference?
It was an interesting conference, and you know, Fozzie's been under a heck of a lot of pressure, even you know, probably for the last 2 years, even, but even more so. With the results that are sort of been transpiring in the Irish test. And you're right, we did want blood. You know, it showed. If you guys go on, you know, our social media page, our TikTok page, we've got a great video in there which has feedback from the public, you know, saying, we asked the question, if the Irish lose, what happens to Fozzie? And they all said he's got to go. Some of them even said he's got to go even if he wins. So go and check that out. It's a great piece of content. But you're right, they lost, and we were expecting something dramatic. What that was, you know, I guess we were all thinking it was Foster out, and who was going to come in? We talked about it on the last episode. You know, we played around with some of the potential coaches and the mix of what that could look like. But I'd never thought. I don't even know why I didn't think about this, that they actually went that second tier down with the assistant coaches and John Plumtree and Brad Moore. And I think there was some comments around us from our podcast or even just around social media saying that, you know, there was a call, I believe it was at the last review they did after the 2020. They talked a lot about how the assistant coaches need to step up a lot more at this level, but they failed and they've paid the price, sadly. What do you think about these guys, John Plumtree and Brad Moore? Do you think they were up to the task, Felix, or just unlucky?
Well, let's not forget can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. At the time, John Plumtree comes off a really successful head coaching campaign with the Hurricanes, where he narrowly lost to a Crusaders side in the semi-finals. He was also part of the assistant coaching lineup with, what's his name? Chris Gibbs. They went all the way in 2016. So he's been building quietly an impressive CV up until that point, 2019, 2020, where it looked like he was going to run it back in 2020, but remember they had that fiasco and they just snapped him up out of nowhere. No one was really anticipating that. And the same goes for Moore. Like he won at the top level with the Crusaders. And you think a guy like Foster, he's looking across the board at potential candidates to take this All Blacks team to a whole new direction. I think generally speaking, those two were the best candidates at the time. The All Blacks generally are such an insular team that it's so hard to get answers out. It only seems like when things are all going to shit like it is now, then things start to surface. No one can really say that they had been underperforming. And it seems quite odd that you'd pin that on the assistant coaches not doing their roles properly. As far as hierarchy goes, that's on the head coach to ensure that those guys are up to speed and make changes well before disaster hits. So, yeah, you got a feel for them. But it's the right move, I feel, because you've got an incredibly gifted team. Unfortunately, that team just hasn't been unlocked to its full potential, and we need the right coaches to do that.
Yeah. Well, before we move to Fozzie, because I do have some questions to come back here with regards to him, but if we stick to these guys, like, do you think it actually paints a picture that perhaps, you know, going from Super Rugby to straight to All Blacks international tier one level rugby shouldn't be done or can't be done? Maybe they should head off season, you know, get some tier two nation international rugby. You know, you look at the likes of Hansen and Graham Henry. They both coached Wales, right, as assistants or head coaches. You know, done by their time at international level there, and then came back. Same with Joe Schmidt. He's done that. He's come back. I mean, he hasn't taken a head coaching role, but let's be honest. Though we talked about it last week again. He had a hands-on role in their first win over the Irish. So is there just a different level of thinking or strategy that goes into it? You know, from coaching at Super or that type of level, then going straight to international. Yeah, what do you think about that? Do you think maybe the jump is too big, or yeah, maybe they've, like you say, it's just bad luck. They just haven't had a good run.
I don't think that's the case for Plumtree. He spent some time with Ireland. He spent some time with Japan, and he was really successful in South Africa. I'm not really sure where else you're supposed to go and what a standard coaching trajectory looks like as far as incorporating them and getting them geared up for the international level. Guys like Warren Gatland and Joe Schmidt don't come around often where they get a head coaching role and they succeed. You could even throw Eddie Jones in there as well, departing his Australian shores and seeing success over at England.
And Japan.
And Japan, there you go. So I don't think there is a standardized pathway. He's proven himself to be a worthy assistant. It just looks as though Foster took a punt on him. And that was an incredibly gifted Hurricanes outfit that he was building. They were so close on many occasions after that championship year in 2016. They were one of New Zealand's best teams in that period. And you just feel, well, what else does this guy need to prove? He's a bit like Razor in the sense that if you've already won one, like you need to dip your feet in the water, and I think that was the case with John Plumtree.
Yeah. Well, perhaps it's actually a failure from the top, from Fozzie, because I mean, how do these assistant coaches know what direction they want to go in if Fozzie's not sitting there? And you know, he talked a lot, and he has talked a lot about where he's happy with the direction they're going in, but he's never really given us a hint or painted a picture of what the hell that actually looks like. You know, like, I mean, I don't know what does it look like? A good scrum, or like, are we going to be attacking out wide and I don't know, utilizing the running game that's been so amazing to watch from a Super Rugby level? I don't know. Yeah, do you think he's failed them in that sense?
Fozzie has failed the assistant coaches, you mean?
Yeah.
I think so. This has been a 2-year project, and okay, we'll give them 2020 as a write off, but still, I feel like they could have walked into that calendar year and been unbeaten, given that just the sheer caliber of players that they have in that team. Unfortunately, it's not just the coaching side, but there's personnel on the field that it is influenced by the coach, and they just haven't been able to, I guess, express themselves the same way we're so used to seeing in Super Rugby. And you know, that's something that we've got to remember. We've been watching, was it last week that I said we catch these players representing their franchises and playing some incredible footy, so much so that they get a call up for the black jersey, and all of a sudden they forget how to play rugby. Well, it looks like that anyway, because they're not doing the stuff that we're so used to seeing. And I don't think, I'm not trying to take anything away from Ireland, because they're an incredibly gifted side. I just think, you know, like guys like Beauden Barrett kicking and, you know, in first phase, he never does that in Super Rugby. Mm. So that's been pushed on him as far as how to approach a test match game. And unfortunately, it didn't produce the results. So to answer your question, I think the answer is yes. I think he has let his assistant coaches down and not being able to unlock the best out of their players.
Yeah, yeah. It's really funny because I think Foster has, I guess, come to terms that, you know, everyone's lost faith in him. And he started that conference with a very particular phrase, and it was really weird. It was like he was reintroducing himself. He said, "I am Ian Foster, and I am the All Blacks head coach." I was like, "What? We already know you're the head coach. What are you up to?" But do you think he was just, you know, making that statement? It was like, "I'm here. I'm still here. I'm still the head coach." Sort of back off, because you can tell that, like, all throughout that press conference, you know, he was deflecting all the questions around, should he still be there? How did he come to this decision? Whose decision was it? You know, he was being very vague about it. And then I don't know if you've watched it, but at the very end, it was about to wrap up, and then someone put their hand up and goes, "Oh yeah, I've got one more question." He's sort of like, "Oh gosh." And the media person goes, "Oh, well, you're not going to like it, but I'm going to ask anyway." And he goes, "Oh, if it's about..." He goes, "If it's about the head coaching, or should I still be here? Yes, I should," or something like that. It was because the guys kept asking the same questions over and over, but you could just tell he was fed up with the same questions over and over again. But I just thought it was really interesting that he had to start like that and make that claim from the very beginning after, what, 3 years of being the coach or whatever it is? Yeah. Crazy, eh?
Well, not crazy. If anything, as far as, you know, PR goes, if you're having to reinforce the public of your position, then that's got to be the first sign that something's not okay in paradise.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Okay. You tell yourself what you need to tell yourself, Ian Foster. The last 2 years have not been a success. And I know I've been overly critical of him, but this is high performance sport and a, you know, professional realm where that there are expectations, and he just hasn't met them up until now. So it looks as though after that press conference, he was given a second life, and I pray that he's able to do something in this upcoming rugby championship.
I agree. Yeah, these first two games are going to be very interesting for him. But before we move on to the players, we should actually congratulate James Ryan from the Crusaders, who's now taken over John Plumtree as the forwards coach. Mate, I think he was here. I just saw something before that he was coaching Heartland Championship in 2012. And there you go. He's climbed all the way to the top of the ranks. Now he's an All Blacks forwards coach. I'm actually really excited to see him get amongst it, to be honest, because yeah, he talked, if you read some articles, his focus, first and foremost, is to stop mauls. And jeepers, do we get smoked in those mauls against the Irish. And you know it's coming when we go to play England and possibly even France to a certain degree.
Mm.
But we saw that demolition in the Super Rugby final. The Crusaders just shut down the Blues, and that was their weapon, right? Their silky lineout. And their drive, their forward play, but they just absolutely destroyed them. So I'm actually really excited for him to get amongst the All Blacks and give it a good run.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you think about James joining the crew?
I probably don't have as much intel on him as you do, but you know, out of these chaotic times comes opportunity, and I really do hope that he grabs it with both hands and showcases what he did with the Crusaders, and hopefully turns around some of their fortunes at the All Blacks. So good luck to him, eh?
Yeah, I agree. Shall we move on to the rugby championship team?
That's right. When they dropped that squad, there was a bit of chat between, well, like our Facebook group, and
yeah,
I don't know, like generally speaking, it was somewhat mild. Like, yeah, okay, we can kind of accept it, but I don't know, there was this sort of unsavory taste left in our mouths somewhat. And obviously, we'll go through the injured players and their replacements. But of that squad, Scotty, who are you most excited to see run out against the Springboks?
So it could be anyone in the squad or of the new players coming in?
Anyone in the squad, putting you on the spot.
Oh, anyone. Wow. Well, mate, I want to see Adi Savea. I just love watching him. I want to see him go toe-to-toe with the South Africans, man. Him and Khaleesi always collide when the centers play.
Yeah.
It's always a spectacle. Yeah, he's probably my favorite player at the moment by far. So, I'm looking forward to him first and foremost. What about you?
To be honest, yeah, my first choice is Adi, but because you've already said him, I really want to see Beauden Barrett. I think he was just getting into some form, and we really need him to be playing consistently at his best to stand a chance against these top five nations. Eh?
Yeah.
Can he do it? I believe so. And it will just create a really good competitive battle between him and Richie Mwanga. I think that fight is still not over, and Beauden Barrett still has a lot left in his tank. So I'm gunning for him, eh? But obviously, those two are the established superstars of the All Blacks outfit, with guys like Tuonga Fassi, Retallick, Goodhue and Laulala all being replaced because of injury. Are you okay with some of these replacements that they've named instead, or would you have reached deeper into the Super Rugby pockets to draw out other names more worthy? What are your thoughts?
To be honest, looking at this list, I'm actually quite happy with it. I mean, Fletcher Newell, he was a powerhouse for the Crusaders, and he's a running threat. In his own right. Apparently he can squat 272, so he's up there in the squatting ranks. Josh Dixon played great for the Blues. He was a real standout. Great in open field again. So we've got all these attacking threats, but great at set piece. Braden Enor, yes and no. Is there anybody else at the moment that could possibly step into that role? Maybe a Peter Umanga Jensen. Or the other Umanga Jensen, perhaps. Although he plays 12, doesn't he, Thomas? Yeah, it's a bit of a hard one, 13 and 12. Tyrell Lomax, I'm happy with him going on there. He actually played really good for the Mighty All Blacks. So
yeah,
pretty happy with these four coming in. I think like having some fresh legs, you know, particularly Lomax, you know, who was, I guess, outed in the first naming. And now he's come back into the squad. It just brings some new energy, you know, into the squad and some excitement. And maybe that's just what we need at this time. Yeah. What do you think about these guys?
I'm excited to see Braden Enor, actually. Before his injury, he was looking like the standout center in New Zealand. I'm just hoping that given enough time, he can reach, not only reach, but overcome and push himself into that next level and being a bona fide starter for the All Blacks. I know a lot of people in Auckland may not like that chat, but he's quality, yeah. And he's an old Auckland boy himself. So there such is the powers of the Crusaders scouting system.
That's right.
I do hope he gets a run and to showcase his quality. But we talked about four players who had to be replaced. What about Peter Gasoakula, who just left, who was pretty much just left out in the cold? And his replacement. Is this justified or not? Where were you leaning with this one, Scotty?
I really feel for Peter Gasoakula, and I think, you know, the All Blacks haven't done him justice, really. I mean, they gave him two shots at it, but it's almost like we've just quickly, you know, put an All Blacks tag on him so we can use him when we want to stop him from going to play for Fiji. That's what it kind of looks like, because, you know, some of these players are going to be moving on at some point, but, yeah, it's almost like we're just saving Sawakula just in case, give him a shot at it, and then we'll put him back, I don't know, where, I guess he goes back to NPC. I mean, Shannon Frizzell, he was actually a standout before getting injured in the Super Rugby. So not a bad replacement. Yeah, I'm not unhappy about him coming into the squad. And to be honest, I'm actually quite happy.
Same.
Because the way he was playing, we need him out there, right? Game breaker.
I just
think it was really, really, really harsh on Peter Gasoakula. Let's hope that he's taken the learnings. I'm sure he would have learned a lot, got a lot of All Blacks gears. Sure, he's not sad about that. And we'll see him again in the black jersey, because it just seems like injuries are around the corner these days. Somebody's getting hurt. Yeah. What do you think about it, mate?
Yeah, unlucky, eh? Two starts, well, two caps and two knock-ons when he just gets on the field. It's pretty rough, but he looked promising. I just think it's a pretty... Why include him in this Ireland test series if you knew Shannon Frizzell was working his way back? I don't get it, eh? I, like you said, I'm a huge fan of Shannon Frizzell. I think his physicality was lacking in that Irish test series. Yeah. Going to be needed against the South Africans. So, he's another one of those players, a bit like Akita Ioane, where we've just waited for them to kick into fifth gear. And it sort of happens periodically, but can they sustain that excellence throughout a test season? Akita Ioane had an amazing game in Wellington, game three against the Irish. And hopefully this selection with Frizzell can sort of push those two to more consistency. Who knows? Another big talking point. Knows. Yeah. But staying in the Lucy, Scotty, how can we go past the number seven jersey, which was a hotly debated topic, and another position where I feel the public were out seeking blood during that press conference? New Zealand Rugby and Ian Foster doubled down on the Chiefs. Captain Sam Kane as being their bona fide, undisputed, full-time captain of the All Blacks. I've got my own opinion on it, but I'd love to hear yours because, man, how long can you keep going with a sinking ship?
Yeah.
If that's any indication of where I'm leaning on this topic.
It is quite hard, this one, because... You know, let's say if it was Richard McCaw, would everybody be calling for his head? You know, I saw some interesting chat around. He doesn't play like a superstar. He plays like a Richard McCaw. He just goes and makes his tackles. He's works hard around the park. He, you know, fights for turnovers when they're needed. He doesn't do all the flashy stuff. He scores a try every now and then. Is that not pretty much what Richard McCaw did? Yet he was probably just surrounded by, hard to say, more talent. But just surrounded by more success, I guess. So maybe it was overshadowed. he is under a lot of pressure. I will give you that. I saw some more stick coming his way from overseas, actually. A bit of a press or article written by an Italian media outlet stating that Sam Kane wouldn't actually make most tier one teams around the world. So he shouldn't, he doesn't deserve to be the All Blacks captain. I think that perhaps he shouldn't have kept the captaincy tag, just because I believe that that is stopping us from being more strategic with the skill set and the Lucy's and actually playing to form. You know, it seems like he just has to be on the park, but he can't play lock, he can't play six, he can't play eight. So he can only play seven. So that's all we can bloody do with him. So maybe it would have been better to take the captaincy off him, give it to somebody who is still a leader, but can play multiple positions and is going to produce on the park week in, week out to give us options. What do you think? It sounds like I'm on the same path as you a little bit.
Yeah, I think where you sort of let yourself down in that chat is the comparison to Richie McCaw. Richie McCaw is a generational player because he was able to influence the games in many ways outside of his tackles. Obviously, he was world-class in the Jackal. His leadership is second to none. Sam Kane isn't quite there yet, probably won't ever be. But I don't think Richie McCaw had the same sort of positional pressure that Sam Kane has. So if we look back at the guys who were really gunning for that number seven jersey, it was Richie McCaw and a whole heap of daylight.
True.
And then they prioritized the six and the eight jerseys, where there was a lot more of an interesting battle going on there with guys like Victor Vito and Liam Messon, like at their best, were challenging for a starting role over Kieran Reid and Jerome Kano. All three of those starters were, in my opinion, like future Hall of Famers. So I think that chat is flawed, because if you were to take away Sam Kane, replace him with either Ari Savia or Dalton Papali'i, you'll most likely get the same sort of output.
Mm.
Not only that, both Savia and Dalton Papali'i bring in another dimension to this game, which is required in this much more expansive style of rugby that Richie McCaw didn't need to contend with during his playing days. Everyone needs to pass. Everyone's got to be able to, run with the ball on top of their core duty roles that they're supposed to be doing as Lucy's. And I just don't quite see that in Sam Kane. Unfortunately, his inclusion in this team bottlenecks the rest of the promising Lucy's into that one free position at blindside flanker, because Artie Savia has to play out of position at eight.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what's real interesting about the scenario, Scotty, is that back in 2018, 2019, when Steve Hansen rolled out the dual playmaker system and having both Richie Mwanga and Bowden Barrett on in the field.
Yeah.
That pales in comparison to what we're dealing with now with Sam Kane and Artie Savia having two sevens on the field, purely because the main reason is that both Bowden Barrett and Richie Mwanga were playing lights out elite footy that justified their inclusion in the starting 15. With Sam Kane, it just feels like, I'm not saying it is, it just feels like, it just feels as though his selection just reeks of favoritism. And
you said it.
I know that it's a terrible thing to say. It's even more terrible that it's evident at the highest level of New Zealand rugby, which is a dangerous thing to really think about. My big worry about this and I don't think a lot of people are talking about this yet, is the pressure that it has on Adi Savia. Why? Because if he's continued to play out of position and the All Blacks aren't getting the results because they don't have their best players on the field, how long do you think Adi Savia is going to be okay with mediocre results? If we were to look at all the top athletes in their top sports, they want to be playing in the top leagues and winning at those leagues.
Yeah.
And at the moment, with this current squad, this coaching lineup, it's hard to believe that this All Blacks team will make it past the quarters in next year's World Cup. Is that a harsh thing to say, Scotty? I know that was a lot to digest, but I really had to go in on this topic because I feel so strongly about it, eh?
Well, I don't think you're wrong. I was actually looking at the pools just before we jumped online with regards to the World Cup. And yeah, I, God forbid, if we don't make it out of the pools, then yes, this is seriously the worst All Blacks era in history. But I think we should make it into the quarters. But we're talking about Sam Kane again. You know, why don't the All Blacks, you know, they should be recognizing that Sam Kane perhaps isn't up to par. Why don't they just implement this, you know, two co-captains to give them some options, you know? And why do we have to have this one captain for one, I guess, one head coach or one era? Like, why does it have to be Sam Kane? Do you know what I mean? It's like they've chosen a captain after Kieran Rea left and the likes of Richard McCaw. Now, okay, you're now the captain until you retire. It pretty much gives them the green light, right?
Yeah. 100%. And you know what's ironic about this whole Sam Kane scenario is that there's evidence within the All Blacks camp to suggest that they can gracefully demote a player of elite status. And you look no further than the battle of the hooker jersey between the incumbent at the time, Dane Coles, and the resurgence. Cody Taylor just coming out of nowhere and starting to play like amazing footy. He obviously takes the number one spot at hooker, while Dane Coles, like Sam Kane, is trying to come back from serious injury. Dane Coles is battling for the number two jersey at the moment. Whether he's on the bench or in the reserves, it doesn't really matter. He's accepted his new role and not being the top dog in his position, and I don't see why they couldn't do the same with Sam Kane. It just blows my mind when they have inconsistencies like that in their team. It's weird, and we could all rally behind Cody Taylor because his emergence as the number one hooker in the country was justified, just like Adi Savia's emergence to the number one open side flanker in the country is justified. Am I wrong in this one?
I think you're right, mate. Everyone's probably just nodding their head right now listening to this podcast going, yeah, Felix, that's the one. Yeah. But just to finish, I will finish on one note. I want to say perhaps, you know, this is just another sign of the weakness in Fozzie's leadership, you know. A strength is actually admitting your mistakes and fixing them. He's obviously he's shown everybody he can make tough decisions, whether that was just him or not, or maybe he hid behind the players' decisions or the board or something like that. But surely he can recognize that Sam Kane perhaps isn't the man, or just come up with a new structure so then we can have other players on the park. Try something different. That's all I'll say.
And to add to your final statement, to really bring it home and to move it away from being pure cynical on this podcast, while we're critical of both Ian Foster and Sam Kane, my biggest hope is that maybe a couple of months out from next year's World Cup, they'll roll out that design that you just alluded to, try something new, and just watch their competition fail to adjust to those changes. That, who knows, they could be working on them right now and just deciding to save it in their back pocket for next year's World Cup. You know, that is my biggest hope for this All Blacks team. So save this chat, replay it in a year's time, and see see if we were right on this one.
Okay.
But yeah, that's our big rant over for what was an interesting press conference. We just got to back this team through the thick and thin.
Yep.
And look, I still love the All Blacks, so that's not going to change. But you know what might change is my thoughts on high tackles and direct contact to the head. Andrew Porter, what happened there? He gets dismissed on his high shot against Brody Retallick, who had to come off with a broken cheekbone. Mm. And he's out for the majority of this
2 months.
Rugby championship. Who knows? Yeah. We might not even see him this year if they decide to play it safe. But Andrew Porter, who made an appearance in our TikTok video, scored two tries and laid on one massive, albeit illegal, hit. The guys upstairs reckon that he's safe. What do you reckon, Scotty? Did they get this one wrong?
All right, absolutely. Like, they have just sent the worst message across world rugby with this one. 1 week earlier, Taovao does a very similar thing. You know, you could probably call that more accidental, yet he gets a 2 week ban, I think it was, or 3 week ban.
Mm.
This guy does the same thing. He has time to actually make a tackle, yet he goes in high. There's no bend at the hip, and he breaks a cheekbone and he gets nothing for it. He gets a series win for it. That's what he gets, and a yellow card. But just the inconsistency of it all is just unbelievable. We saw it throughout, you know, with all the three changes in refs in this Irish series, and now we've just seen it again with the judicial. It was almost like they thought that nobody was going to see the outcome of this. They'll just brush it and can't be bothered with the paperwork. I don't know. That's a human element. That's a possibility. They probably just didn't have time to submit the health and safety ACC forms or whatever. Something along those lines. But I think it was just absolutely appalling. What are your thoughts on it?
It makes no sense to me. You know, when the whole chat around this new generation of rugby was going to be around player safety.
Mm.
They get this one horribly wrong. Not only that, they're breathing down the neck of that major lawsuit that's coming, headed by ex-players who've, who've been dealt with really serious head injuries and the side effects post their rugby playing career. None more so than our beloved Carl Heyman, you know, who was considered a hard man back in his days and probably still is a shout for one of the best props in world rugby history. Yeah. Is this a good look? Like, not so much for the players and the fans, but a PR exercise where a lawsuit's just around the corner? I don't think so. And if we're really being genuine and authentic about cleaning up some of the darker elements of our game, you just ping him. My big fear from this whole situation, and I really do hope that this doesn't happen, is that it's going to be one of those things where, or it might turn out to be one of those things that a team's success is predicated over which referee they get on the day.
Yeah.
We don't want that. Oh, dude.
That's the old saying, play to the ref.
Play to the ref. Oh. And you know what? I probably just jinxed myself, so I do apologize in advance if the All Blacks receive some harsh calls in this rugby championship. But I don't know. There's clearly some work-ons in that department, and perhaps if they come out of this this lawsuit somewhat alive, they can really look at making some serious changes in how they govern some of those areas of the game, because it looks like, and I have to say, nobody knows. Oh, man, it's been one heck of a podcast, and apologies, fans, if you feel like there's been somewhat of an emotional roller coaster. You should have seen us at the end of the Irish game last against the All Blacks. Dude, We're nearly there, folks, so do hang on tight. We've got some exciting news, actually, and Scotty, I'll get you to lead this one. If you're not a big fan of waiting 4 years to crown a world rugby champion, we could just have the thing for you. Scotty, what is this new proposed tournament that could see teams clash for a new cup?
Yes, so there was a proposal made for one was a Club World Cup, and there is potential for it to be signed in October 2020 for a 2024 kickoff, so only 1 year after the World Cup. And this will be the likes of your Crusaders, your Leinsters, your what other teams have we got there? You know what I'm saying? The Blues, the Sharks, all that sort of stuff. You know, that's a chance for the top team, the top club teams around the world to actually come together and play a tournament. That's one proposal. And then the other one is actually a new world league, which will take over all of the, I guess, these Six Nations, the Rugby Championship. It'll cut all those out and instead will create, through the months of July and November, they'll actually play an international tournament. Probably similar to the World Cup, so it kind of takes a little bit of light away from the World Cup, that does. But what it will allow is, I guess, Division 2 teams to... it's broken into two divisions. So obviously, all your Tier 1 nations will be in Div 1. Tier 2, your likes of USA, Namibia, Romania, and Tier 2. And, you know, they'll have the chance to fight for relegation into Tier 1 and play some Tier 1 nations. So it means more rugby for these and more competitive rugby for these divisional two or tier two nations, but it does pose another risk. It's more rugby, more even from this club World Cup that's being proposed. It's just more intense rugby, more travel, more time away from family, more probably bigger squads, some more money. I mean, if we start with the club side, you know, it's quite difficult because, you know, in other countries, clubs are actually owned by businesses, right? And companies, where in New Zealand, it's sort of provinces. So there's not as much money being pumped into it. So what is that going to mean? Is that going to mean that, you know, these clubs in the likes of France and the UK are going to just start pumping even more money into players, trying to bolster their teams to become the Club World Cup champion. And that's going to be very enticing for a player in New Zealand who's, you know, on maybe the third string All Black, who's never getting game time. He might go, you know what, I might just go over here and make a couple of million and play on the world stage this way. So that's even more players being dragged away from New Zealand rugby. What do you think about this Club World Cup? Do you think it's a good idea, bad idea?
I think it's a great idea. Anything to keep rugby alive during the calendar year is a good idea. I think there's too many lull periods within the rugby calendar where it's a bit of a risk for people to sort of maintain that interest. This way, you've got an elite level competition that. I don't think it will take away from the glory of a World Cup. There's evidence that suggests that even in some of the other top global sports like football that play for sometimes three cups in one calendar year, and their squads are massive and they're constantly changing to manage that workload of playing really long seasons. Who would have thought that something like a Champions League could rival a World Cup? Those same players that are performing in the Champions League are still turning out for their countries in the FIFA World Cup. So based off of that, I've got no problems of, you know, the top rugby superstars turning out for their clubs. You get as a fan, you get the luxury of both. So I'm all for it, man. Although not quite the same games, doesn't quite have the same physical toll on the body. I do imagine, the squads being, compensated. And it could be quite nice way to introduce some younger talent into these extended squads and see them at playing at a higher level rather than some of these domestic leagues that we have here in New Zealand. So I'm all for it, man. Rugby is a game that needs innovation, and I'm a huge believer that this is one step in the right direction.
Mm. I like the point you made there, probably more to, in the football world where they're playing for multiple cups in one season. And if you are a likes of a Chelsea or a Liverpool or Manchester United, you know, who are playing Premier League, I guess, and they might be in the Champions Cup, and they're also playing the FA Cup as well. Yeah. So that's three cups all in the one season. Yeah, they all play multiple games, but they have bigger squads. They have greater rotation, I would assume.
Yeah.
And then it becomes more of a more strategy in terms of, rotating your players, having a bigger squad for the coaches, doesn't it? As opposed to bulking it out. I mean, it's starting to get that way at the moment. You sort of saw that in the Super Rugby season, eh? There's a lot of changes week in, week out with players getting rested. And then sort of near the tail end of the season, the crunch, that's when you saw some familiarity coming in, week out. But, I think I like that. I mean, I am concerned about the amount of rugby that players are playing, and maybe that's just something. If this comes into play, then some of the current leagues will have to look at maybe shortening some seasons or whatnot. Or like we've already mentioned it, having bigger squads, but then that means bigger, I guess, financial backing. So there are a lot of, I guess, challenges to overcome to make this beneficial both for the player, the viewer, and world rugby. But I think ideas like this, certainly what's needed to innovate the game and innovate what we see on telly. Because I'd love to see a French team play a Crusader side. I think it'd be great. Yeah.
it's really going to put an end to this question about, and it's really been the elephant in the room the last couple of years as far as global rugby is concerned, is which hemisphere is the best? Well, if you can only fit 15 of your nation's best on the field at one time, that's probably not an accurate description of how strong the rugby is in that one nation. So why not send out multiple clubs to represent the style of footy that nation's renowned for? And I do think teams like Crusaders, Blues, Hurricanes and Chiefs have a good standing in this new Club World Cup. Not being biased, just telling you guys the truth. You heard it here first on Kiwi Roots Podcast. Let's go.
Let's eat it. Well played. Well played, kind sir. Well, there you go. You heard it first. So we're for it. That's what we're saying. We want it. We want to see it. Okay, so to the other proposal, which is the international side. So you cut out all the Six Nations, all the Rugby Championship, all the history that goes with it. You just toss it over the edge of a cliff, and now we're looking at 10 teams in or 20 teams total, two divisions split, 10 teams apiece. Gosh, bit of alliteration there. And they're playing a round robin tournament. I assume it would be just whoever has the most points at the end of it. So that's another 10 weeks of intense international footy, but you're playing all the teams that have made the squad. Could you run this in conjunction with the club rugby, or is it more of just you got to have one or the other?
Nah, you've got to have one or the other. And I think what'll happen, this if we go down this rabbit hole that you're suggesting, that's the one that has the biggest risk to diminishing the value of a World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
If you choose the previous option, that really, in my opinion, would just take the value off some of these, I don't know what you call them, but these random cups that get played for and the random test series. Like, they're nice to look at, probably nice to lift after a hard 3-game series, but do they really mean something? I personally think not. So why not get the clubs playing at an international level and really spreading out the quality across the board of these top nations to see who's got the better style of rugby. That way, you leave the World Cup as it is, untouched, and where they can fit, nations can fit, international friendlies, we can start to call them. I know that I'm leaning again on the whole football side of things, but it's a good framework to start off with, because it's proven to work. And I think we should go with the club footy instead of playing international footy. I've already made it known in this podcast that I think the All Blacks should take a different model and lean more towards what the British and Irish Lions do, because I think the talent is here in New Zealand to put out two teams. That won't happen if we've got the Club World Cup to play for. So I don't know. I think it's a good idea. Just get it done. Get it done, because our game needs it. But my friends, is at the highest level. There's a lot of stuff that probably you guys don't see that happens at the grassroots level. Last weekend in Wellington, two teams fought off for a prestigious cup, the Jubilee Cup, for those who aren't aware, over in the mighty Porirua at the Jerry Collins Stadium. Norths edging out Petone in what was a thriller of a match. And before that, we had my own Orienta Rongotai play Old Boys University in the what we can roughly call the Division Two title, the Hardham Cup. Scotty, I don't know if you caught any of that stuff online, but should we start with the Ories game?
Sure.
I was there for both games, and we had superstars turn out on both sides for both games. I mean, ex All Black current Hurricane Julian Savier was in the midfield. You would have liked this one. He partnered up with his old rival from Wellington College, Artun. Artun Mason.
Oh yes,
how I saw that. Like, guys in our generation are looking at that midfield thinking, oh my word, stacked. Absolutely stacked. And they haven't played together at all this season, and their combinations were lethal.
This fire, was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
He racked up 100 games, didn't he? Artun as well, 100 games for Ories.
Yep.
Man, that's a feat, 100 games. That's dedication.
Not just that. He bounced around. He was part of sort of that that championship era when Motu Matu'u was there. Guys like Jared Henry, Manu Leotau was there for a while before he shot off to France. You know, that Ories team has some serious pedigree for such a small catchment area and a small club.
Crazy.
Never mind the fact that Ma'anoni was a part of that and turned out for them a few years ago. But it wasn't just the Ories guys. Current Hurricanes players such as Caleb Delaney and Tame Plumtree, who plays for the Blues, were suited up for OBU. And they certainly made Ories work for it. It was their game for about 60 minutes. And it's so funny. I was talking to one of my mates. He's a referee. He had the weekend off, actually, and he tuned in online, and he said, I'm not going to lie to you, Felix. I turned the game off at around 50, 60 minutes. At that time, it was like 20 to 3 OBU. And I was like, you're an idiot. You missed out on one of the greatest comebacks ever, because Ories came all the way back to win 24-20. And it was some electrifying footy that was played in the later stages of the second half. And Julian was a huge part of that, giving a nice little offload to, I forget what his name is. I can't think of him right now, but that was beauty. He brought in two defenders, boop, up the back.
What about that short ball? I saw the highlight package there.
Yeah.
Oh, that was that Julian that gave that.
Julian gave the offload. Like probably could have scored it himself if he reached, but he got tackled.
This one came out of like a ruck, and it was like the first receiver. He just turned and gave it, and it was like the
poof,
literally milliseconds in it, or it would have been a board pass. That was crazy. That was intuition, right? They were planned or whatever. Good communication, but that was awesome. That they had no chance of stopping that. He was running the meanest angle in between a gap, and he just went sailing through. And I remember seeing that guy when he was playing for Jable, and he's maybe looked small on my phone, but big boys, man. There's always backs.
Oh, that guy, in my opinion, he's the second coming of Julian Savia, old Rongotai boy, Benavata. He made the Centurions.
Oh, actually. Yeah.
So he's in and amongst that development scene. And that guy's crazy. He's absolutely crazy. But yeah, that was that game. And then seeing guys like Duplessis, Karifi, and TJ Pedernera, and Jackson Garden Bishop, who had a pretty good game, turn out for the North Club. It was awesome to see. I don't think the Norths had it, because that was another game where Petonia suited themselves, had the early lead. It was to and fro for the majority of the game. And Norths actually, off the back of some really stout defense for about like 10 minutes in their own 22, they were crazy, man. And you see the class with Duplessis Karifi getting that crucial turnover right at the death, just as Petone were pressing for the late win. Did you catch any of that?
Nah, I caught none of it, mate. I was just sort of keeping in touch online, but I was away. What was I doing? I was returning home from a conference, so I didn't actually watch a lot of rugby. I was flying in the air, actually, when all this was going on.
Yeah.
I was just sort of jumping on Facebook, just watching for the lives and watching for highlights and just keeping up to date with that. But I did see a lot of the Hurricanes and All Blacks playing, which I thought was absolutely fantastic for the club, for their clubs, actually.
It's crazy, because you could see the rest of the team just really vibe off that sort of professionalism. And I have to say, the quality of rugby that was played that day, I felt like a real sense of pride. Like, Wellington rugby,
cool, man.
Not that I'm being biased, I'm totally being biased, but
what a biased guy.
Top notch. It was top notch footy from, you know, a small bunch of professionals and a whole bunch of amateur players. So,
yeah.
If you're not from Wellington, I do suggest you come down one winter and catch a random club footy game. You will not be disappointed.
No, I agree. The last thing I want to talk about actually is a bit of women's rugby. If we can move along to that, carrying on,
yep.
Slightly upper level. But there was a game here in the Manawatu on Sunday. The Cyclones, Manawatu Cyclones and the Bay of Plenty were playing here at the Central Energy Trust Stadium. Oof. And so we caught probably a bit of maybe last like 30 minutes of the game, a little bit late. But our daughter wanted to go and watch, so we took her along. But I just wanted to say, like, the skill level and the structure that was being played, and it was pretty up there, eh? And compared to the men, like, we actually witnessed probably one of the greatest tries in this match, and you'll probably see it online somewhere. But the Bay of Plenty team did this meanest, like, they were over attacking in their 22. Sort of the game was on the line, because when we turned up, the Manawatu were losing by 3-odd tries, and they literally scored 3 tries in a row. And we thought we were going to be seeing another awesome comeback. And we put it down to our presence. I'm pretty sure. But the Bay of Plenty, man, they just got this clutch try. They did a crossfield kick, and the Cyclones winger just misread it, and it just sailed overhead. Just like went straight into the Bay of Plenty winger's breadbasket, and she just sprinted, sailed in for a mean try. Like,
wow.
Even though it was a Manawatu crowd, like, you couldn't not, like, you know, give that a clap and a, yo, let's go. That was mean.
Yeah.
But just plays like that, you know, like, the women are just, they're getting out there and getting amongst it and trying things. And they're playing really good rugby at the moment. I'm so looking forward to this Women's World Cup and actually watching more women's rugby, professional rugby, with the season just starting. The NPC.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to watch, eh? We'll definitely go back. The coolest thing is that it was free, which is always nice. They were just doing a donate a can so they could do a kids can donation. Yeah. But it would be nice to see more people there considering it was free. We've got to support the women's rugby and help the game grow. So, there's one around you and you're not doing much. Just head on down and just go and watch. You'll be pleasantly surprised at the quality of rugby you'll watch.
I think the Wellington Pride has got both those teams, though, eh?
Oh.
We'll just have to find out if they play one or two up in Palmy. I'll come and wearing my proud Wellington.
Hey, look, man, I'm still a Wellington man through and through. You probably won't see me wearing a green jersey or a bucket hat.
But, nevertheless, if there's rugby guys, whether it's at the grassroots level, provincial level, or international level, do go check it out. This game, I feel, is on the verge of some serious change, and change is always a good thing, despite what the hard hats say. Speaking of change, this game has made its way on the social media channels, and especially here at Kiwi Roots Rugby. Last week, we dropped a really cool TikTok video, and it garnered quite a bit of interest, eh, Scotty?
Minutes ago, our clear.
I feel like TikTok is a new platform, well, for us millennials anyway, where rugby can be chopped up, utilized, and presented to a younger audience in a refreshing, vibrant way. That's certainly the vibe that I got from the interactions online, Scotty. I don't know whether you're following us on Spotify, YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok. We do appreciate the love and support. But I just as a heads up, it probably feels as though the focus is going to be leaning more towards Spotify and TikTok. Might be a little early in saying that, but getting this sort of feedback from the social media channels means that we've got to answer the call of the people, unlike New Zealand, right? So, are you doing it live?
Sorry. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, my bad. That's really why you were stopping.
Oh, I was getting goosebumps. I was like, man, that's such a cool intro. Like walking past the cup and just like real slow music. Oh. Guys, if you haven't checked it out already, go check out that job that took me so long to create. Yeah. Share, like, and subscribe. But honestly, this has been a real, really cool chat. We've just been real open and free-flowing about these topics. From us here at Kiwi Roots Rugby, we'd love for you guys to join in the next episode. But that's it from us. Scotty Poynton and Felix Filippo signing out. Ciao.
See you next time.